Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Talk is about to begin. Hey, 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 come on in.
Welcome back to the Tuesday Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Doug LaMaurice and Stephen Means, no Nathan Baird, because we are doing hoops. This is a look ahead to the next basketball season for the Ohio State Buckeyes, plus a little bit of a final wrap on the season that was, the roster moves that were. So Steven's going to have the floor for most of the time. Nathan is getting ready for our big Wednesday pod when we are going to dig in on the state of the quarterback situations at every Big Ten program. We're going to have multiple guests to talk Penn State quarterback situation, Michigan quarterback situation, Minnesota quarterback situation. We're going to rank all 14, go through them, put Ohio State in context now that spring football is over. But it's time to do this, Stephen. We did not officially do this. We're kind of waiting because we don't really want to look back all that much. We wanted to look forward more. So we wanted to get a sense for like what the roster is going to be and what next season's going to be like. I guess we don't know 100%. Efton Reed officially committed to LSU over the weekend. So we already knew he was gone. You had reported that he wasn't going to be a Buckeye at one time. We thought he might be. How do we have to talk about EJ Liddell and Dwayne Washington right now, Stephen? Because they're the two best players on the team and they are both doing NBA stuff, but we're kind of assuming they're both back, right? That sort of hangs over everything about next year. What's the correct way for our listeners to be thinking about those two guys?
I'll talk about them separately because I think at this point you have to, because there are two different stages in their lives. One's coming off his sophomore year and one's coming off his junior year. With EJ Liddell, the full expectation is he should be back. You have to remember 2 years ago when Caleb Wesson did a similar thing here where he went through the process. He declared for the draft, but he didn't sign an agent. And he made it a point to say that in his announcement that he was not signing an agent so he could maintain his eligibility. EJ Liddell is doing the same thing. Caleb Wesson came back for another season before going pro for good. While EJ Liddell was probably going to do the same thing. Now, because of the draft process and how the NBA season has been, remember, we just had a draft in the fall. So everything is pushed back right now. That's why it's taking them so long. It's not because he's on the fence. It's just he hasn't done anything yet. He hadn't had a chance to go work out with certain teams and get all the information he needs, which is why players have until July to make any type of decision. But with him, 100%, the expectation is he'll be back on the roster next fall. He just wants to go through this process because more than likely he's going to do what Dwayne Washington is doing right now after his junior year. And once again, Dwayne Washington, he has opted out. I'd say 75%, 60% that maybe Dwayne Washington is back because maybe he's in the same similar position that Caleb Wesson was in after his junior year where he opts out. And it's at this point, it's going to be, listen, you're not going to be a first round pick, but your stock is not going to get any higher than what it is right now. And that's second round at best, but it's also, it can get lower. You can get undrafted and not be an NBA player at all. At least Caleb Wesson was on a G League roster last year. So with Dwayne, it might come down to, this is the best it's going to get, even if it's the second round.
Caleb Wesson just signed with, who did he just sign with? Somebody in the Belgian league. Felu Oostende of the Belgian league. Mm. Dwayne Washington is not going to get drafted, whether he goes out now, in 10 years, if he went back in time and went to the NBA. There is no scenario in which Dwayne Washington is ever going to be drafted by the NBA. And he's not an NBA player. I mean, he's not. I don't know if EJ Liddell is an NBA player. I think EJ, as a comparison for Caleb, makes a lot of sense. They both tested it as sophomores, both came back, showed the best they can be as juniors. And then it's like, well, probably the best you can be probably is not an NBA player, but, you know, okay, go. Dwayne, it's just a matter of, and I don't mean to be flippant about this, but it's like, how much of a hurry are you in to get to Turkey? That like, I like it. And Ohio State has a great, and we actually at some point on this podcast should probably talk about Jayshon Tate. It still is amazing to me that of all the guys, like sort of these like really good college players that came through here, David Leidy and William Buford and John Diebler and Aaron Kraft and Deshaun Thomas and all these guys, that Jayshon Tate is like the guy that went to Europe and then came back and is making an NBA life for himself. What a credit to him. I would not have guessed that. I would have said, oh, I think David Leidy has a better chance to be an NBA player than Jayshon Tate. So Jayshon Tate is an amazing story. But Dwayne Washington is never going to play a dribble of an NBA game. So then, but Stephen, there is also the realization of like, that's never going to happen. So why not like go get paid? Even if it isn't Turkey or Greece or France or all these wonderful places where you can make a pretty decent living, get to play the game you love and start making money. So like, it's interesting to me. I just can't imagine that draft stock has anything to do with Dwayne's decision. It's just about when does he want to make money playing basketball? And you said 75%. That's like the 25% chance that it might be now.
Yeah, that's what it was for Caleb, and that's what it is for Dwayne. It's not even about the NBA. Maybe, like I said, with Caleb, he did spend a year in the G League. That's the best that could happen for Dwayne Washington, just because, I mean, the G League is the G League. They'll take a lot of different players. But for more than likely, he's going to come back. Because it's, quite frankly, it's as you said, this is the best it's going to get. And if you come back and get hurt, it can get worse. And that's what you have to weigh those options at all time. It doesn't matter whether you're a guy who might be a top 10 pick or a guy who might not get drafted. You have to go when you're at your best, because you can't allow that to get even lower to where maybe something happens. And now you're not playing anywhere because you're hurt. And the Jayshon Tate thing, he has Draymond Green to thank. A lot of guys who play like Jayshon Tate have Draymond Green to thank for why they have contracts anywhere, whether it's the NBA or overseas or in some EuroLeague or whatnot, just because the league got smaller. And so guys like Jayshon Tate, who are hustle players who can probably make a couple of plays here and there but aren't scorers at all, now have an opportunity to play in the NBA.
He's like 6 inches shorter than Draymond.
Draymond's 6'6", and Jayshon Tate's 6'4", 200 pounds.
Draymond's only 6'6"?
Yeah, he's little. He's listed as 6'7", but he's more like 6'5", 6'6".
But he plays the five. He's a small ball five. Jayshon Tate's right. a small ball five in the NBA.
No, what I'm saying is Draymond Green is the extreme of all the things that you're seeing other NBA teams start to element with, going with these small ball lineups where you've got a 6'5", 6'6" guy playing power forward.
But Jayshon Tate is also averaging 11 points a game. It's not like Jayshon Tate is like just diving on the floor
for the Rockets,
15 minutes. Yeah. But he's averaging double figures in points and almost 30 minutes a game. For any NBA team, I don't care what NBA team it is, they're tanking. Yes, of course, they're trying to lose. So, but I mean, it's unbelievable to me. Like, what a credit to that guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so EJ will definitely be back, because EJ doesn't know for sure. Just like Caleb, I would imagine, like Caleb was harboring NBA aspirations. And then the reality became the reality. EJ is certainly harboring NBA aspirations. Dwayne just can't have the same kind of aspirations. But for the purpose of this podcast, we are proceeding as if Dwayne Washington and EJ Liddell will both be playing for the Ohio State Buckeyes in the 2021-22 season. And then if that's not true, we'll come back and do another podcast. We'll do it again. But yeah, that's a, you know, like you said, it's probably like 95 EJ, 75% Dwayne. So that's a pretty good way to anticipate this. All right. Last little thing looking back before we start looking forward. Well, these are some old questions that I saved from like right after the tournament ended and we were gathering some stuff and we knew we were going to wait and do this basketball podcast. This is from the 419. And they have some good points early on, but the bottom line is this. Does Chris Holtmann deserve credit for overachieving last season with a less talented roster, or criticism for not having a better roster at this point? And he talks about the DJ Carton transfer, the Gaffney transfer, the Luther Muhammad transfer, right? All that stuff from last year. And Stephen, it's such a smart question because I absolutely think the answer is both. I think they overachieved their talent by like looking like a top 10 team for most of last season. That is an overachievement of their roster, but it is an underachievement to me of what their roster is. Ohio State's roster should be better than what last year's was. Like as we had that conversation the whole time, where's the pro? Now, Malachi Branham's coming, and we'll get into that in a minute. Maybe that's one, but I think it is both, Stephen, simultaneously. What do you think? Over, under, or both?
It's definitely both, and it's because of DJ Carton and DJ Carton alone. I understand Luther Muhammad was a top 100 guy, and there's that video of him going at it with Colin Sexton and them staring each other down, and that was a great Twitter moment and whatnot. And Alonzo Gaffney, he looks the part, right? Just from if you saw him walking down the street and he told you, I play in the NBA, you go, yeah, I believe that. You're 6'9". Arms 7'7" wingspan or whatnot, you can jump out the gym. I believe you're in the NBA if he just told you that. But Luther Muhammad was nothing more than a defensive specialist at Ohio State. So that's you weren't missing that. Yes, he was a 2-year starter, but you're not missing a defensive specialist. But that's not the reason you weren't winning games the 2 years prior, because you couldn't score. And then Alonzo Gaffney, I'm just going to let you guys in on a secret. He was not going to play here. And there are a lot of reasons, both off the court and also some effort stuff that were going on for why he wasn't going to play here. This is what you can look the part all you want, but eventually you have to get on the court and actually show you are the part. He never did that. It's all about DJ Carton. And last year was proof of that. I mean, let's just take the Big Ten championship game and let's take the NCAA tournament loss. Imagine if DJ Carton was the guy handling the ball for you instead of Dwayne Washington. I mean, we saw how explosive that kid was his freshman season early in the year and how much hope it gave the fan base. But then all of a sudden, obviously, he had some off-the-court issues. Now, that stuff happens. You're not going to blame the kid for having some mental health issues. So he transfers closer to home. But now he's off to the NBA, as I thought he would. I thought he'd be a 2-year guy and then off to the NBA. Imagine if that was the guy who was running your show instead of Dwayne Washington and CJ Walker. So should the roster be better as far as some recruits they didn't get? I don't know. That's hard with Ohio State. You're never going to feel the same way about basketball as you do about football when it comes to 5 stars across the country. But when you get a top 40 recruit very early on in the process, and it's clearly like, oh, this is Holtmann's guy, and then you lose him in 6 months, that's a problem.
Yeah, I disagree with that. It's about, because listen, they got credit. I know what you're saying about Gaffney, but they sure got credit when Gaffney came in as a top 100 guy. So the idea, and it's what coaches say, it's like, the secret is, oh, he was never any good. He was never going to play. Well, then why did you take him? And I guess you took him because you're trying to make inroads in Ohio and whatever, but like, be confident in who you are, be confident in who you are as a recruiter, and take the guys that you think are going to help you, because every guy you take is a guy you don't take. So like, I get the idea of, okay, like Luther Muhammad leaving, I guess, isn't the end of the world. But he was the highest rated recruit in Chris Holtmann's first recruiting class. So then maybe you should have recruited somebody better or developed him better or whatever. You picked that guy. And he came here, and now you're saying he's a defensive specialist. It was no big deal. He left. Chris Holtmann's first full recruiting class, Luther Muhammad transferred, Jadon Lede transfer immediately, Dwayne Washington and Justin Arnes.
I agree with that.
So it's not, to me, it's not about Carton is the big, Carton is the big actual loss, but I'm talking about like your program. I'm talking about your roster. I'm talking about who you choose to go after and who is realistic and who is the big time get, right? And so that's, I thought their roster should be better. So last year's was pretty good, but I feel like, and now we're covering old ground, and we don't want to cover too much old ground. To me, if EJ Liddell is 2 and Dwayne Washington is 3 and somebody else is your star, that looks like an Ohio State roster to me. When Liddell is 1 and Washington is 2, that feels like you're a step short. And so it's a credit to Chris Holtmann that he got that team when they were putting guys on the court against Illinois and Michigan, Illinois and Michigan had better players or had more better players. And Ohio State beat them. Ohio State hung right with them. That's great X and O coaching. That's great motivational in the moment coaching. I would like Ohio State basketball to have as many good players as Illinois and Michigan basketball have. And I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation, however you do it. So we're going to get into some of this stuff. It's like, well, the transfer world, and this is okay. Just show me your roster, however you do it. And I will tell you if I think your roster is up to Ohio State standards. I get it. And every coach in the world is going to start using transfer stuff. It's like, oh, the kids have blah, blah. I get it. So have as many good transfers in as you have transfers out. There is a transfer plus minus, Stephen, that's going to come out of this. And if you are losing DJ Carton to Marquette and replacing him with guys from Utah State and Bucknell, I think you're at a transfer minus.
No, I agree with that. I agree. You are not wrong. They did not win the transfer. That's a thing now. The transfer battle is now something you have to deal with every offseason, and they lost it by a large margin last season, and then it showed up at the very positions where we thought it would show up, and that's point guard, because you didn't have a talented option to go with, there with, so you ended up just throwing the ball in the hands of Dwayne Washington. To look forward, they did a better job this time around handling the transfer battle. Now, you didn't get Efton Reed, no, but you got Malachi coming in, and you lost role players. You lost a role player and a guy who didn't play at all at Ibrahim Diallo and Musa Diallo, and you replaced that with a guy who might play a little bit that might not play at all, and another role player in Joey Brunk and Jamari Wheeler. So they did a better job of it this year, but you are 100% correct. You were right to chastise Holtman about it all last year. You lost the transfer battle. And then regardless of how people felt about it, you lost it, and then it showed up that you lost it 12 months later.
So the main thing is looking at, again, like where they are right now, the 18 and 19 classes, which are Holtman's first two full classes, only three of the eight guys didn't transfer. So I get it. In a transfer world, that's still not good. I expect, could you keep half the guys around? And then, frankly, the two guys in the 2020 class last year, Zed Key and Eugene Brown, didn't do anything for you. So, you know, maybe they will now, but like those are your three recruiting classes so far. Only three of the eight stuck around, and the two last year, am I supposed to be impressed with Eugene Brown and Zed Key? I guess maybe they'll develop into guys, but in a world where freshmen come in and help teams all the time, they did. So I think last year was underachievement for the program, overachievement for the roster. We agree on that. That is where Chris Holtman is right now. So I want to jut off on this briefly, Stephen, before we get into Ohio State, because I do think Michigan is sitting there as a direct comparison, and they should be. I would like to, if you have an argument or anyone has an argument of like why it's not fair to compare Ohio State basketball to Michigan basketball, and why that is somehow putting too much pressure on Chris Holtman, or it's why there's a big difference there, I am here for it. Because to my eyes, because I'm not doing it Michigan State, I'm not saying compete with a Hall of Famer, because Michigan State's Michigan State. Michigan State is the Duke of Big Ten basketball. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying be Michigan State. I'm not sure why they're not Michigan. This is another old one. Marlon, who lives in Ann Arbor. Living here and operating a business on campus, I can say I've never seen so many basketball jerseys in Ann Arbor. It's if there is really a transformation going on right now at Michigan, and they're becoming a basketball school. Is that actually a thing? The culture of the basketball program sure is different. And let me do one more on that idea from the 518. Has Michigan officially reached the status in basketball that Ohio State has in football in the Big Ten? So I'll answer that last one very quickly. No, do it for a decade and then I'll see it. Now, the thing is, John Beilein made two national championship games. Trey Burke was a player of the year. They have kind of done it. So, I mean, if you want to make some kind of argument that like
Beilein was Tressel and Juwan Howard
is Urban. That's exactly what I was like, do we like, how have we not written that yet? Like, that's okay. Well, we know what we're writing on the site this week. Beilein is Tressel. Howard is Urban. And does that mean, see, because Holtman's not Jim Harbaugh, but like Holtman might, I don't know who Holtman is in that equation. I think that might be a very good comparison, but I still don't think I still don't think it's Michigan basketball is still at the level that Ohio State football is, unless I'm selling Michigan basketball short. Because I do think that's a really good comparison, Stephen. What do we think? Is Michigan basketball on the same level as Ohio State football?
No, because Ohio State's done it too long for that. But they're headed in the direction. Because, I mean, Juwan Howard's 2 years here, his first recruiting class, the number 14 class in the country, and Hunter Dickinson and Zeb Jackson are at the top of that. And they were impact players this year. And then this 2021 class is the number one class in the country with 2 5-stars and two other top 100 guys in it. It's a reload class because it's got 6 guys in it. He's headed in that direction. But I think where it's very clear, Jim Boeheim was Jim Tressel, because it was lower rated recruits and they got the championship games. We're calling Juwan Howard Urban Meyer, but Urban Meyer also got the championship games along with the recruiting aspect of it. Juwan Howard has yet to maybe break through in that way, or even in this is where we won't say get to a championship game, we'll just say get to a Final Four. He's yet to do that aspect of it. But from the recruiting standpoint, yes, they're headed in that direction to being what Ohio State is in football. Even if it's a little harder to do it just because it's more teams you have to deal with who are also maybe Ohio State in football when you ask that question.
I mean, he certainly has Urban juice. And they got to the Elite Eight. He's only been there 2 years and he had the tournament canceled. Yeah. And then they were a one seed and got to the Elite Eight. So like they're like right there. And Urban, you know, Urban won his first title in year three, and this Juwan Howard's getting ready for year three. So like the juice factor, right? I can see like the rest of the conference being like, man, that program is really good. And then you bring in like a super juice guy who is juice, but also total pulp. This is sizzle and steak. It's like I'm doing juice and pulp. Howard is juice and pulp. Like there's something to this guy. This guy is not fly by night. This guy is legit from top to bottom, just like Urban was legit. Like he wanted you to come, but like the skins were on the wall, man. Now Juwan Howard had not done it at other schools, but his NBA career as a player and as an assistant coach, I mean, it's all legit. So I could see, Steven, I think the rest of the league might look at it, especially as a good comparison of like, man, they already were good. And now they're going to be better. Like now they're going to take this sort of culture of winning to another level because they brought in a guy who's going to elevate the recruiting even more. I think that very much is possible. And I do think the idea of like Michigan becoming a basketball school, because I mean, it's like, what makes you a school, Steven? It's like, well, where do you win more? Where can fans thump their chest more? That's the school. Well, what are you going to thump your chest more about as a Michigan fan, basketball or football? I mean, it's certainly been basketball for a long time. So, and practically, I mean, let's talk in 5 years and we can figure out if Indiana is a basketball school or a football school. We'll see how Tom Allen is doing versus Mike Woodson. You know, things change sometimes. I don't know. Things can change. So I don't know. I think I might call Michigan a basketball school right now, Steven.
I'm calling them a basketball school. I mean, I next season, I'm fully expecting the basketball program to have a much better season than the football program. And also, I mean, I won't be surprised if Michigan's basketball team beats Ohio State twice, even with the way people are viewing this Ohio State basketball team. I don't know when we had a whole pod last offseason about when we think the next time Ohio State loses to Michigan. And I don't think any of us picked in the next 2 or 3 years here. So that should tell you right there how you view these schools. This is Michigan's clearly a basketball school at this point, and Ohio State made them that way.
So let me ask this then. Is it fair to compare Ohio State basketball to Michigan basketball? Or is there something in the idea of like, listen, man, like it's the stinking Fab Five. They were like the coolest college basketball players ever. They got like one of the main dudes from that who is like has an unbelievable track record that is going to immediately get the attention of any high school player he's recruiting. And by the way, he also clearly can coach. And Chris Holtmann played at like a little at Taylor University. He played in, you know, like that's like Chris Holtmann wasn't in the Fab Five. So yeah. Like, so then like, yeah, it's not fair. He'd be like, hey, Chris Holtmann, How come you didn't get that 5-star recruit? And he'd be like, because I wasn't in the Fab Five. I can't live my life over. I'm not as cool as him. I am not as Or is it like, listen, man, I don't like however you do it. Like everybody recruits differently. Everybody relates to players differently. Go get five stars. Go compete at the top of the Big Ten. Go compete for national titles and do it your way without being in the Fab Five. Is it fair to have the same expectations for Holtman and Ohio State that we have for Juwan Howard in Michigan?
It is, and it's because of the latter. You don't in football. I think there's like one way to do it, right? If for the teams who really want to win, you got to just go get talent every single year. Get talent, get talent, get talent. But most of the time, that talent's not playing for at least a year for the most part. In basketball, if you go get 3-5 stars, they're probably in your starting lineup or at least in your top nine rotation. And if they're inexperienced and they're just not ready yet, we've seen it with Kentucky's had enough versions of this for us to have pretty good examples. We've seen five star freshmen at Kentucky win a national championship and then 12 years later fail to make the NCAA tournament and not even win the NIT. So because of that, yeah, you can still, you can't. It's not fair to say, hey, Holtman, you should recruit the way that Juwan Howard's recruiting. You really can't ask that of anybody in the Big Ten, not even Michigan State. They'll get a 5-star, but I don't think they're going to get 3 and 4 of them in the same recruiting cycle. That's not how that operates over there. But what you can do is say, hey, you can compete with them on the court because no, you might not have the NBA talent that's high ceiling, but you can combat that because you have a roster that's got some quality guys on it. Your best guy might be an NBA player, even if he's not a top 10 draft pick, like we saw with Admata. Jared Sullinger wasn't a top 10 draft pick by the time he got to the NBA. He didn't even last long in the NBA. But your top end guy was an NBA player, and you had a lot of quality experience behind that, and they got the Final Fours and Elite Eight and Big Ten championships because of that. So you don't have to – it's unfair to compare the recruiting, but it is fair to compare what they do once they actually get on the court.
And it's just – so we're not asking Chris Holtman to be Juwan Howard, but he can be John Beilein. So it's like try to be that. So, okay. That was a lot of the big picture stuff that we kind of had saved. I have one more roster building question that's part of the new crop of questions that Steven got from our texters. We sent that out. We're going to start doing a question of the day for football recruiting and a question of the day for football with our texters. We're going to keep stuff going. We're going to have that interaction. We're going to have constant analysis in addition to all the regular stuff on the text. It's a great time to try it. We're starting this new question of the day and you ask the questions, we give the answers. That would be really bad if you paid $4 a month and we were just asking you questions. So try it. It's a good time to try it now. We're starting it this week, 614-350-3315. And then we also do things like this, where we put the questions out and you guys can send them to us and we talk about them on a podcast. So Steven put out a call for fresh basketball questions. We're going to get a bunch of those next. You're listening to Buckeye Talk from Cleveland.com. Doug LaMaurice back with Steven Means. Steven, I think this is good. I think it's worth like resetting the roster, but let's answer this question first. And then we can just run through like everybody we expect to be on the team next season. It's from our guy, Joseph in Atlanta. Could you discuss the overall roster building? The 2015 class all disappeared within 2 years. We know that class. That's the Mickey Mitchell class. That's long ago. And you could draw a clear line from that to Thad Mata's departure. Now, Chris Holtman has lost 3 of the 4 high schoolers from 2019 and also losing 2 of 4 from 2018. Is this just the new normal and we should expect that half or more of every recruiting class doesn't finish their careers in Columbus? Or do you expect this just to be a blip and we'll start seeing less turnover every year? So that's a good way to zoom in. We already talked about this a little bit, Steven, but how much of this should people accept? How much of this is a blip because it was early in Holtman recruiting? Or how much of this is like not an indictment of Chris Holtman, but like a something we have to keep our eye on if it keeps happening and they keep losing half their recruiting class within 2 years?
Yeah, I think it's what made him reset his recruiting strategy a little bit is because he lost the DJ Cartons of the world and the Luther Muhammads of the world a little bit. 2020, they kind of took a step back and went with 2 development guys and Zed Keaton and Eugene Brown, who, yes, as Doug said, they didn't help you much this year, but they're more developmental pieces that might just end up being role players their entire career. But then in 2021, you came back and just went straight Ohio and you shot for the stars once. And that was with Efton Reed. And obviously he just chose LSU, but for the most, you went Malachi Branham, the number 32 player in the country, Ohio's Mr. Basketball, who might be your superstar. Kalen Etzler, the number 147 player in the country, spent most of his high school years as a top 100 recruit, a guy, another power forward, a stretch four type of guy that you kind of need in this age of basketball, but more of a developmental guy. But then also Michi Johnson, your point guard of the future, who was a top 100 guy, top 50 guy before his injury, and he showed some promise this year and this extra bonus year that doesn't count up against anything. Now he'll be the starting point guard going forward. So you went straight Ohio, and then you continued that process in 2022 when you got Bowen Hardman as your next commit as a two guard who's probably a shooter. And then, you know, after you reset some recruiting things, then you started going national a little bit more, but a little bit more, you know, detailed with it. Roddy Gale out of New York, the number 41 player in the country, and Bruce Thornton, the number 59 player in the country, both of those guys guards. Now, they probably still need to go get a big, but you reset your recruiting strategy and didn't just come in here and start shooting for the stars because you got DJ Carton and thought, okay, we've arrived. We can go get every guy like that. But then, you know, when things go haywire, I wonder why they're leaving.
It does seem like it's better. I mean, I think you explain that very well. And you do see it as a shift, right? Because listen, it's not news to Chris Holtmann that like the first couple recruiting classes weren't 100% exactly how he wants to build a team, right? He was new. They're trying to do what they can. I'm not going to like just excuse it, but also the idea of, all right, well, you do see you see an evolution here, Stephen, mm-hmm. that the two national kids that they've had locked down forever in that class, that next class, that seems reasonable, right? It's a Georgia kid and a New York kid, right?
Yep.
That seems real to me. And the idea of when Ohio's good, get the best players in Ohio. I mean, it's weird because Michi is still really is an incoming freshman and is part of this recruiting class, but he was already here. But the Michi Etzler Branham group, who are this is a defining group. And again, as we always said, the best Thad Mata teams were the Ohio teams, right? It's like when Ohio was good, they got the good Ohio players. And I think there's something to that, Stephen. I know we've talked about it before. To me, the best way to get fans excited about your team, and maybe this isn't fair, but I think it's reality, is either have NBA guys, have Greg Oden, have D'Angelo Russell, or have Ohio kids. And so it's like, if you're not going to count, you can't count on Greg Oden. They tried to go get Greg Oden. Efton Reed, he didn't come. So then when your team is like, I just think it's a little slightly easier. And we see it with Carmen's crew and the TBT every summer. People still love watching David Leidy and Evan Turner. Not Evan Turner. He's the coach, but he's not from Ohio. David Leidy and William Buford and Aaron Kraft and Dallas Lauderdale and John Diebler and all those guys. Mostly because they won, but they also were Ohio guys. So this class, Stephen, you're saying if we did, I do. Everybody does. If we questioned Holtmann's roster building the last couple of years, he changed. And it's possible that this group, the Etzler, Branham, Michi group, and then the group after them with a couple of these national kids that they got early and really developed strong relationships with, we may see the end of a bunch of dudes leaving. We may see a core that can stick together for a couple of years, truly being built. And all the questions we currently have may be answered very soon.
Yeah, I think the one thing you have to remember here is nobody knew who Holtmann was before he got this job. He wasn't to an extent of you didn't think no one looked at him as some big time recruiter when he was at Butler, who was over recruiting for where he was at, to where you were thinking, OK, once he got to a school at Ohio State, he was going to go get the Greg Odens and D'Angelo Russells of the world. Right. So you got to build a little bit of a reputation first before you go do that. You do that by he wasn't in a Ryan Day's position, but also the program wasn't left as healthy as it was for Ryan Day, where, yeah, we don't know who you are. But
Let's just not compare anything to football. There's no point to it. But we can compare it to Thad Mata. We can compare it to basketball. We compare it to other things.
That's fine. Okay, yeah. Fine. Thad Mata also had Greg Oden in his back pocket. Chris Holtmann didn't come into Columbus with something already in his back pocket to get the ball rolling from a national recruiting standpoint. So, but at some point, Thad Mata had to go establish himself in Ohio. And once he did that, the consistent winning was ridiculous at that point. Chris Holtmann had yet to do that. He came in and started, and it was I don't want to say he was acting like he already had a Greg Oden in his back pocket, but he just went straight national with it. Outside of Alonzo Gaffney and Justin Arons, who were just Justin Arons is a role player, and we knew he was going to be a role player, and Alonzo Gaffney didn't work out. He just went straight national with it and didn't have a backbone in his own backyard yet. Now, so he did things backwards. He should have did that first. Now he decided now because he's reset some things and reallocated where his priorities are. Now we're seeing a class like this where you're establishing yourself in your backyard and at least getting the talent that's there that can genuinely help you next season. Now you can go be national with it.
I mean, and that was the number one question I had about Chris Holtmann when he got here. It's like, can he Ohio State recruit as opposed to Butler recruit? And I think like that's a legitimate question, but it's also like that's how it works in basketball. You go from a lesser program to a bigger program, and like that's how it works for everybody. And then you have a window of like, okay, well, we'll see. Like, you know, it doesn't have to be overnight, but like at some point it's like, okay, well then now it's time to do it. And I think now is that time, but he might be doing it. But like if two out of the three guys of Branham, Etzler, and Michi transfer in the next 2 years, then like there's no excuse, right? And if the national guys that are coming the year after like don't work out or leave, whatever, like, you know, I mean, now if they replace them with transfers from North Carolina who come in and lead them to the Final Four, I get it. It's all about results. We really, it's not the transfer thing is going to change how we view recruiting, that recruiting is going to be less of an end game in itself. Like, hey, you had the blank right class, but it's like, well, half of them are going to leave. They're going to go this, they're going to do what's your transfer. And like, people don't rank transfer classes at the moment. Maybe we're going to start to do that, you know, at some point. Like, all right, well, who won the transfer portal? Because that's going to matter as much as the recruiting. So in the end, it's just going to matter what your roster looks like. So I do think it's time for Chris Holtmann to raise the level of the roster, but he very well might be doing that. So I do think you make a good point about like, he seems like he's kind of changed what they're doing. Okay, let's get in a little specifically to the team itself for 2021-2022. I want to do a couple specific questions from the texters before we ask you, Stephen, to sort of do a full roster reset. From the 509, how big of an impact does Malachi Branham have? And this is a very interesting way to phrase this. If Dwayne Washington stays or if Dwayne Washington leaves, how much do you think that actually affects how much Malachi Branham plays, his usage rate, how many shots he takes, how many points he scores? Like, what is that a huge difference for him, or is Malachi Branham kind of going to be who he is regardless?
I think he should be who he is regardless. That's how this should go. I think there have been some conversations with Dwayne that will attest to this is how it's going to go. If there is a hierarchy at the beginning of the season, it should probably be EJ Liddell number one, Malachi Branham number two, and Dwayne Washington number three, as far as options. That's how it should start out as. And maybe it stays that way because EJ takes that next step and he's a Big Ten Player of the Year candidate and whatnot. But regardless of what it is, those should be your two. And by the end of the season, those should still be your two in whatever order you want to put them in, depending on who's playing better by then, while Dwayne Washington is third. That's how it should go. That might have to be a consistent conversation throughout the year as well. Now, if Dwayne doesn't come back, it just makes it easier because then you don't have to have that conversation. It's just, here, Malachi, here's the ball. Come, go be Malachi. I think it's just a consistent conversation that has to be had that, listen, Dwayne, what you did last year was pretty impressive. You averaged 16 points a game as a former three-star recruit, and you were an all Big Ten player. You overachieved. Your career so far has been an overachievement, and that's fine. If Malachi Branham comes in here next year and he averages 16.4 points per game, no one's going to be saying he's overachieving. Everyone's going to be saying that's exactly what you expect from a top 30 recruit to do at a team who needs that, who needs this guy who can score 16 points a game pretty easily the way he can. So that's how it should go. That's what I think that's the best way to answer that question right now is it should be Malachi should have free reign to just be the guy from a scoring aspect, because that's the one thing that of everything else that he might need to develop, that's the scoring of the ball is the one thing that he's not going to have a problem doing at the college level.
Is he a make your own shot, have the ball in his hands a ton guy, or is he more of a wing who is going to want other guys to help get him the ball in the right spot.
Off the dribble, mid-range stuff, three-level score, can kind of do it all. ISO player, can be a catch-and-shoot guy if you need him to, but he's a guy where you want the ball in his hands and you want him creating offense for you.
So that would be that does sound like then that Dwayne does have some effect on him. But as you're saying, Dwayne had to do things last year because they didn't have anybody else to do it. They didn't have anybody else with the ball in their hands. I mean, like EJ's EJ, but like in terms of like ball handlers and perimeter guys who could make their own shot and do stuff in crunch time, it was Dwayne. Now you're adding another guy. So Dwayne's usage rate has to go down. Are there sites that track usage rate in college basketball? I'm not asking for like right now, but like I would be curious.
There probably is, and that'll be interesting to watch. Yeah.
So that makes sense. But Holtmann, yeah. I mean, Holtmann's going to get that message across, which frankly, I mean, is probably some little factor into Dwayne. Dwayne's not going to be as much of the offense next year as he was last year. So do you want to come back and have your role reduced? Now, the team's should be better. The offense should flow, right? Even though the offense did flow really well a lot of times, like a lot of times at the end of the games, it kind of came down to like Dwayne's got to do something. So I do think they're going to have another scorer, another more legit scorer in the lineup with them. That should make them better, but I'll be curious to see how that does factor into Dwayne's decision. All right, let's get to Michi. This is from the 419. With CJ Walker graduating, it seems like a lot has to fall on Michi Johnson to run the point, make good decisions. Since Dwayne isn't really an ideal point guard, is that the plan? Michi with some Dwayne sprinkled in, anyone else to help? And this is where obviously the Wheeler guy from Penn State factors in here. How do you think the point guard minutes break down, and what kind of role do you think Michi Johnson will have?
By the end of the year, he's your bona fide starting point guard. That's the expectation you should have for him. I think it's going to be eased into, because we have to consistently remember that the kid didn't play basketball for 2 years and he was a sophomore in high school last time. He really was doing it at a high level, even though he had some moments last year. I think bringing in Jamari Wheeler as a guy who's a defensive specialist as a point guard can help Michi, because now he's not trying to run your offense and do that stuff while also trying to guard other teams, you know, really good point guards. He doesn't have to do both of those things. But also with him and Dwayne, you do have some veterans that can ease those, you know, growing pains that Michi's going to go through next year as a first-time starter in college basketball. That's just going to happen. So we can't get bogged down on it if Michi has a bad turnover here or there. That's just to be expected. You have two guys who can ease that fall because they're veterans, but the expectation should be he's your starting point guard. Now, is he going to be an all Big Ten level starting point guard? I think we have to relax a little bit. We have to halt the brakes. And it's similar to Seth Towns' situation, where he came here as a guy who was a conference player of the year in the Horizon League, averaging 16, 17 points a game. It's like, oh yeah, that guy's just going to come here immediately. It's like, no, he hadn't played in 2 years because he had knee injuries. It's going to take a full offseason for him to get to anywhere close to that. He still might not get back to that. He'll probably be a guy who averages 8 points a game for you, which is fine. That's all you need from him. That's how we should approach Michi, where it's be patient and don't just think that because he had a bad game to start the season that it's just thrown out the window and all your expectations you had for this kid when he was scoring 50 points as a freshman in high school are out the window. It's just you have to slow your timeline with him a little bit, and I think they've got two veterans that can help that, ease that.
Okay, let's talk big men here for a second. Had a question about Ibrahim Diallo, who just never was any reason for him to be on this roster. With Diallo transferring, will they add another player to the roster? That's just kind of a detail thing. Like they have it, he left. They have a scholarship spot open, right? But are we expecting anything at this point?
Not right now, no. I mean, they might. No, right now, that's not necessarily the plan. But if they do, it's not going to be a guy who's going to have any type of impact in the rotation or anything like that. I think their rotation is pretty set with the guys they have. I think it's going to be hard to do this, but because of the one-time transfer rule now, because Holtmann used to love that guy who would come here and have to sit a year and just be in the guys like Justice Suing and CJ Walker, who had to sit a year when they transferred before they could play. But the one-time transfer rule probably eliminates that. But right now, that doesn't seem to be the expectation. I think they're just going to leave that roster spot open for right now.
So let's talk about big men who are here. This is from Joel in Phoenix. How necessary is a true big man in order to have success in today's basketball, considering other Big Ten teams, trends in the game, whatever? We all remember the days of Greg Oden, B.J. Mullins, et cetera. We also remember the Dallas Lauderdale days. And last season, by that they mean when you don't really have like a scoring big guy. I mean, EJ's kind of that in-between guy. But how should fans feel about it? So let's talk about how the big man minutes might go down this year. And how important is it? And I guess big man is however you define it. So how important is it? It felt like last season, Steven, that they missed it. But I don't know. Maybe this is just the way the game is.
I don't know if the big man is important in terms of him being your best scorer. Michigan State's proved that when they had guys like Cassius Winston player of the year, but then you like who was a presence down there. You have a guy who's a presence down there. And when it's only Kyle Young, who's not always practicing because he's dealing with this injury or that injury, and you don't have any depth behind him because Zedke is kind of an undersized big, that's when you run into issues, which is why – no, Joey Brunt wasn't the guy you wanted. Obviously, Efton Reed was the guy you wanted, but he's a quality option for what you want him to do. And that's just give some depth and give some bodies down there who can be a presence, especially on a defensive end, because that's when you need it more with this roster makeup than you do on the offensive end. You've got your scores. You've got Malachi, you've got EJ, and you've got Dwayne, and Injustice can be an offensive threat as well. But you need it more for the defensive end because every other team does have a presence down there. And so if you're going to play in this league, even if he's not your best player, he has to be a presence.
Yeah, right. On the defensive end is where you need it more, where you're just asking undersized guys defensively to try to defend some of the bigger guys in this league who can do some stuff. Okay, let's do this. I want to break down like the minute breakdown, what the rotation's going to look like next year. So I get it. Guys move around and swing around, but we're going to account for all 200 minutes in a college basketball game and how we think that breakdown will go next year. And we can, we'll move. I'll track it, Steven, but you can move guys around however you want to do it. So let's start with the big man. Let's start with whoever is starting at the five and then however often you think a five will be on the floor. And maybe it's not. Maybe we don't need to account for 40 minutes. But how are you dividing up the big man minutes next year, would you guess?
I'm giving Kyle Young 25 minutes.
Okay. And that's your count. Kyle Young still in your mind in a world where Joey Brunk, where Joey Brunk is here, where Zed Key has developed. Kyle Young, how tall is Kyle Young?
He is 6'8", 225.
He's still the five in your mind. He's still like the main guy. When another team has a big time low post threat, might be 6'10 and a half. Mm-hmm. It's still Kyle Young that they're going to lean on the most down there.
Yep.
Okay. So Kyle Young's getting 25. Who's getting other five man minutes?
Zed Key, I'm going to give him 17 minutes.
Okay. So now we're over 40. Now we're playing them together sometimes.
Yeah.
You're playing Kyle Young at the four sometimes with Zed Key.
Zed Key might get some 4 minutes this upcoming year.
Okay.
Which is why I only gave him 17 because I'm going to give Joey 3.
Joey Brunk. So I'm supposed to get excited about Joey Brunk. You think he's going to play 3 minutes a game?
I don't think you should get excited about Joey Brunk at all. I'll be honest with you. And there's your big man.
I'm not the one who was trying to bait and switch Efton Reed and Joey Brunk.
I'm not bait and switching. I'm just telling you, he's just going to be a defensive presence for this level of minutes.
It's practically walk-on minutes. 3 minutes. They like had a parade because they got a guy from Indiana. 3 minutes a game? All right.
Kyle Young and Zed Key are getting the minutes.
I don't know. I'm following you. 40. Okay, so that's 45 minutes.
In a game that's going to matter, he's going to play. Zed Key and Kyle Young are getting those minutes.
Okay.
So those are your big man minutes.
Yeah,
so,
and I'm not interested in Tennessee Tech minutes. I'm interested in like minutes against Michigan in February.
Right.
Okay. All right. So then the four. So that's at 45 minutes. So we went over there. So this is stretch four, right? Maybe a scoring four, maybe a big bodied four at times. We already accounted for Young and Key and Brunk. Who else fits in here? And this is Liddell, right?
This is Liddell's getting 30. I'll give him 30. I'll give him 30 minutes. Cause then that leaves some room for Zed to get some of those 4 minutes as well.
Okay. Cause you still need him on the court to score. right? Like, yes. When he's not on the court, although like Branham and Dwayne can run some two-man stuff right on the perimeter and do a little bit, that will be a thing, right? That when they will be more effective offensively with EJ Liddell off the court probably this coming season than they were last season.
Yeah. Those two, but there's another guy I'm going to throw in this as well as for why that'll be the case. I think they've got some versatility with their roster, which was one of their better points last year. They had versatility last year. I think they're going to have that even more this season. So getting into our next guy here, I'm going to go Justice Suing. He gets 25 minutes. Okay. And that'll be split between 3 and 4.
Okay. And this is, I mean, you're following like, you know, EJ Liddell last year, 29.4 minutes per game. So you're giving him 30. That makes sense. Kyle Young last year, 26.3 minutes per game. You're giving him 25. That makes sense. Zed Key last year, 12 minutes a game. You're giving him 17 minutes a game, but he was a freshman last year. He's stepping up his role a little bit. That makes sense. So, okay. So we got Liddell 30 as like the guy who's going to score, and then swinging between the front court spots. He's 25 minutes a game. All right, let's go to the three, the rest of the front court. Is Etzler factoring in at all? Like, is he going to play?
No, he'll be the
four. No,
no, not freshman year. No, I think he's the developmental guy of the three freshmen.
Okay. So then who else is in the front court mix?
Seth Towns, I'm going to give him 12 minutes because I think that's all his body's going to be able to handle.
Okay. And is there anybody else or is that it?
And then that'll be it. No, because Eugene's a guard, so that'll be it.
Okay. So that we've got six guys and they are accounting for 112 of the 200 minutes that we're looking for. So far, between those six guys. So now we've got 88 minutes to divide up between the two backcourt spots. So divide these. Let's start with Dwayne. How much is Dwayne going to play?
25.
So that's a little down, right? That's a little. Yeah. Dwayne's down. Dwayne led the team in minutes, 32.2 last year. So Dwayne's going back to 25, but Holtman will talk him through it. It'll be okay. Everybody's okay. It's okay, Dwayne. And then Malachi Branham is more of a two he's a wing. Right.
Yeah.
So whatever he is. So how many minutes a game is Malachi Branham, Mr. Ohio basketball, top 30 national player coming in as a freshman? What are his minutes?
I'll give him 22. I think Dwayne still might play the more minutes, but Malachi will have the higher usage when he's on the floor.
OK, so 22 last year, there were five guys who played more than 22 minutes a game for Ohio State. So that's easing in the freshman a little bit. Okay, so now we're going to Michi. Let's go to the point. Michi's going to play the most minutes at the point, or will Wheeler? And again, Wheeler is the transfer from Penn State. Really good defender at the point guard position. Veteran dude. So what are the minutes between Michi and Wheeler?
I'm going to give Michi 16 minutes.
Okay.
And then I'm going to give Jamari 10 minutes.
Okay. And then that's 26 minutes with a true point guard on the floor.
Yep.
So then the other 14 minutes is Dwayne running the show.
Correct.
Where you've got Dwayne on the ball and then Branham and Suing and Liddell and Young like doing their thing, but Dwayne is back with his hands on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's 47. That's 159. That's 26. That's 30.
I should have 10 left.
180. You should have what? Yeah, I got you with 185, right? I think I have you with 15 minutes left.
Okay, cool. That's perfect. Because this is where it gets interesting, and I have to think a little bit of what I might do.
So because Justin Arnes as your shooter, right? Is he getting pushed out here, or is he giving you anything? And then the development of Eugene Brown, if he gives you anything, right?
Yeah, I'm going to do this for right now. I'm going to go 8 minutes, Justin, and I'm going to go 7 minutes, Eugene. With I am leaving open room that by the time we get to February, it'll be more 12 minutes somebody and 3 minutes the other person, depending on Eugene Brown's development. because he gives you, that's the thing here. He gives you both. What the problem last year, one of the Musa was at one end of a coin and Justin was the other end of a coin, as far as one was all shooting and all offense. But then when it went away, it was okay, what are you doing out here? And then Musa was all defense and couldn't give you squat on offense. And Oral Roberts took advantage of that and basically said, hey, I dare you to put the ball on the floor. If Eugene can be both sides of that coin as a shooter and a guy who's athletic enough to be a defender, then it'll start. I think Eugene will start stealing those minutes. But if not, they might just go with Justin because at least you know he can shoot the ball.
Yeah, Justin Arnes. 42.5% from three. As a guy who actually took threes, he's definitely your best shooter. I mean, Dwayne Washington took 238 threes last year, 37.4%. And then Arnes took 127 and shot, as we said, 42.5%. Then EJ Liddell was next. Took 80 threes, shot 33.8%. So Arnes is your best shooter. I could see a world, right, where if there's a world where you have Washington, Branham, Liddell on the court together with a big and Arnes, and you just tell Arnes to go stand in the corner and you let Branham, Washington, and Liddell suck up all the attention and hope that Arnes can hit like three open threes a game. I could see a world where the presence of Branham, right? So Branham is going to be a step up from Suing in terms of your third best score, right? Suing last year was 10.7 per game. Dwayne and EJ were both 16 per game. Suing's fine, but Branham is more dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Offensively. Yeah.
Suing is, he can do a master of jack of all trades, master of none. He can just give you a little bit of anything, but there are going to be nights where he just doesn't give you anything because he was kind of inconsistent like that last year. Branham, you know what you're getting every night. You know you're going to get 10 to 15 points every single night. Actually get him. If it says he's averaging 13 points a game next year, he actually had 13 points a game, not 21 game and then 2 points the next game. And so, yeah, a little more consistency, but it also frees up Justin Arnes. I'm not Justice Suing to not feel like he needs to be a scorer every night.
So Justin Arnes played 18 minutes a game last year. This would be a somewhat significant reduction in his playing time, but he also like fell apart down the stretch.
Yeah.
Right. Like he didn't do anything at the end of the year. He was just a different guy in the middle of the year. I mean, he stopped making shots. So
teams found out he could shoot and that Ohio State only had two guys who could do anything on offense. So they started scheming for Justin Arnes. And now all of a sudden he couldn't make shots anymore. They started overthinking it and wouldn't even shoot it at some point.
The last five games of the year, he scored 10 points total.
Yep.
2-0-3-0-5. That's bad. And that's when it's all good teams. That's Big Ten tournament and NCAA tournament. And he would disappear. But what you're saying is you add another offensive threat in Branham and all of a sudden it takes some pressure off of him, as opposed to him being like the third most dangerous offensive player on the court with Liddell and Washington. And people are like, well, he's just waiting for a ball for someone to kick it to him. So we're going to get out and put our hand in his face. You add Branham into that. You know, John Diebler really thrived when he was playing with a bunch of other really good offensive players, that when he had Jared Sullinger and William Buford and David Leddy and other guys out there as options, Evan Turner, you know, then John Diebler could just stand there and shoot. Like that was really effective for him. So we have Arnes' role reduced, and given the way he played at the end of the year, it should be reduced. But if his game could rise back up with the other guys around him. So you have nine guys who are averaging at least 10 minutes a game. This is our projected minutes breakdown. I think this is probably pretty spot on. I think this is a very good guess from this far out. 30 minutes a game for EJ Liddell, 25 each for Dwayne Washington, Justice Suing, and Kyle Young. 22 for Malachi Branham as a freshman, which I think makes sense. Zed Key at 17 as your backup big. Michi Johnson, 16. Playing less than half the game as the starting point guard, that might be low. But But I'm curious to see again. You can't put too much on this guy from right off the bat. Seth Towns at 12, that might be high. When people start stealing minutes, Seth Towns. If Eugene Brown steals minutes, it's going to be from Seth Towns. If Michi and Branham need to be on the floor more, it comes from Seth Towns' minutes. But right now, Seth Towns at 12, and then what's Wheeler's first name again? Jamari Wheeler, the Penn State transfer, the backup point guard at 10 per game. And then we have Arns at 8 and Eugene Brown at 7 and Brunk at 3. That's 12 guys. You have 9 guys playing 10 minutes. I mean, you know, it's not a 12-man rotation. So it's like there's got to be some guys who aren't getting very many minutes. But like a 9-man rotation, and then like Etzler just is not a factor yet. That's fine. But Branham is a factor right away. Does that sound like a potential Final Four team to you? Like when you map out the different guys at different positions, how they're going to work guys in, the increase in offensive scoring options, does it feel that way?
Ceiling-wise, I could see it. I think somebody could sell me on this being a Final Four team. I think we keep saying it, but it's got to happen. This is at bare minimum a Sweet 16 or Elite 8 team. Just based off what that talent is, you've got 3 guys who you know can give you 15 points if they need to. You've got some quality options at point guard, and one of those guys who can give you 15 points can be thrown into that point guard role if needed. You've got depth at big man, and you've got some versatility on the wing. Yeah, this should be at least a Sweet 16 roster where the ceiling is Final Four. But the problem is, I mean, this is the most talented roster he's had at Ohio State. I will say that. I don't know if I want to put do I think this is going to be a Final Four team? Because, I mean, they've had moments where they've shown it in the past and then they fell apart. So I will say that this is the most talented roster he's had from person 1 through 9 in the 9-man rotation, but then also the 3 guys who might rotate that number 10 spot.
But this is a team, I mean, again, everybody doing the way early projections, that kind of thing. They're a top 10 team. They're like a team that's being talked about as a top 5 team even, right? Mm-hmm. From some of the national guys that, again, the assumption with Washington and Liddell back, the addition of Branham. I mean, they're basically getting everybody back that matters, except for C.J. Walker, right? And they feel like you're replacing C.J. Walker with Wheeler and Michi. And then C.J. Walker was like an important veteran for them. But I think they're OK with that trade. Right. I mean, like, so in that world, this is a pretty old, experienced team that a lot of national people, when they put it in context, are saying like, yeah, this absolutely feels like at least a Sweet 16 team when you look at everybody returning.
Which, as we talked about after they lost to Oral Roberts that night on the emergency pod, it's a different – I mean, we Holtman's clearly not on the hot seat. We'll say that now. No, he's not. But ask us that a year from now if they get bounced in the first round again with this type of roster.
Right. So, I mean, like, they shouldn't see it as pressure. They should see it as opportunity. But, like, basically everybody who matters other than C.J. Walker and then Musa Diallo – who played 15 minutes a game last year, transferred because he saw, talking about guy, somebody whose minutes were going to get eaten away. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just saw the writing on the wall, as you've said many times, Stephen. He's a one-way player. He's defense only. So, you know, Eugene Brown, it's time for Eugene Brown to take Musa Diallo's minutes. So Musa Diallo left. So that makes sense. I want to ask this one question because this is kind of a thing that was weird about last year. And the texter asking this question is on to it. And it is something that's hard to wrap your head around a little bit, Stephen, that like Chris Holtman wants to play good defense, right? He takes pride in good defense. He's kind of built a reputation on good defense. And they were not good defensively last year. The texter from the 419, how is this team going to get better defensively with mostly the same personnel back? So again, Diallo, who was a defensive guy, is gone. Wheeler coming in is a big time defensive guy, but like it's not only that. Like, how else are they going to get better at this, Stephen?
It does start with Wheeler. I think he can guard guards, and most of the problem was Musa Diallo is their best defender, but also he was in and out of the lineup at times for different reasons, whether it was because of injuries or DNPs. He was the best defender and your only true defender. I think Jamari Wheeler helps with the guards. I think shoring up some depth at the big man spot takes EJ off of those guys, which is very important. EJ's 6'6" and he's your best scorer. That combination doesn't equal hey, put him on the Luka Garza and Hunter Dickinsons of the world. That just doesn't make any sense. So he doesn't have to guard those guys. You've got some size. Once again, it's not a bait and switch, but you did just get some squat. Oh, they tried to bait and switch, yes. But I am not going to call it that. I'm just going to say he's going to be in this role. Kyle Young, Zedke, Joey Brunk should be enough to defend other teams. Star, big man, whatever you want. Hunter Dickinson's of the world. Justice Suing is a quality defender who's versatile as well. I think in offseason where Seth Towns, he's never going to be an elite defender, but an offseason where he can go through a true, you know, summer camp and just get a little bit more healthier can help with his defense as well. I think Dwayne not having to carry as much of the scoring load can help. He can put some of that energy toward the defensive end as well. I just think this roster is built in a better way where guys are guarding guys, where they actually have a chance at slowing teams down. While last year you were asking guys to defend guys for a long period of time where it really didn't make much sense for them to be doing that.
Okay. We are going to take one more break and come back with final big picture things about the Ohio State basketball program. We'll do that next on Buckeye Talk. Stephen Means and Doug Maurice back on our basketball look ahead. Minor wrap up. Look ahead to the 2021-22 season. Two questions I want to get into before we get out of here. This is from our guy Khalid on text. Again, if you want to be able to ask questions like this that we're going to be answering on text and answering on the pods, as always, go ahead and sign up for the tech subscription at 614-350-3315. It's a 14-day free trial, $3.99 a month after that. All right, Colin, what are the realistic expectations we should have as Buckeye fans for the 2021 team? I am now regretting taking the good/decent Mata years for granted from 2007 to 2013. Do you see this team with a comparable finish to any of those Mata teams? With 2007 being the highest ceiling, of course. So I'm going to briefly, before we answer you answer it, Stephen, I'm going to take a moment to yell at Khalid, because if you took the peak Mata years for granted, you're crazy. Honestly, like the people that you took, like Mike Conley and Greg Oden and Evan Turner and William Buford and Deshaun Thomas and David Leidy, like the skill that was on the floor, how fun those guys were to watch, what they achieved winning 5 Big Ten titles. Like, if you took that for granted, like, what would you not take for granted? Like, if, because you cannot be like a national championship or bust Ohio State basketball fan. So, like, I can't even believe anybody would take that for granted. Based on what are you taking that for granted? You should have been absorbing every moment of that and embracing it and loving it. And coming home after games and saying, like, man, that was fun. I loved that. I don't know how long it's going to last, but this is awesome. So, I mean, I was the beat writer then. I sure as heck wasn't telling you to take it for granted. I know that. So, like, please don't. Now, on one hand, like, I am very comfortable trying to hold Chris Holtmann to the Thad Mata standard, because I don't think it is unreasonable for Ohio State basketball to do that. It is the peak, but I don't think it is like a sharp pointy peak. Like, it's as high as they got, and I think you should be able to walk on it. But on the other hand, like, I don't take it for granted, right? But I think it is a reasonable thing to shoot for, but not take it for granted. So, all right. We just sort of talked about this, Stephen, but like, just how should people be thinking about this team? Because I will say last year was a weird year to absorb, because they were in the top 10 like all year, and the Big Ten was viewed as the best conference all year, but then the conference laid an egg in the tournament. Obviously Ohio State was a dud in the tournament. Like, they had a good run in the Big Ten tournament, but then, I mean, to lose to Oral Roberts, like, you can't shake that. So I think it was hard in the moment. I think we even felt in the moment last year, Stephen, like, it's like, are they really one of the 10 best teams? Like, what? It's like, well, they beat Illinois. They beat, like, they're winning these games. Like, really? I guess they are. Like, I guess, yeah. I mean, I guess this is real. And then it was like, oh, okay. Well, no, they weren't quite that good. So I do think last year was hard to get a handle on them. So here we are, months out from the season. Tell our listeners, Stephen, what people should expect and how they should think about what this basketball season is going to be like.
The expectation should be 25 wins. And the reason why is, if you watch this team, they're actually really good non-conference. They put the last 3 years, they put together these really good non-conference records, where, and then things just fall apart in January or February, whenever in the Big Ten schedule. So if they get to, if they got to find a way to win in the Big, I understand you can't, it's always good to get a win in the Big, in the 10, and the Big Ten's the toughest conference, and that's fine. Okay. But Illinois and Iowa and Michigan State still find a way to, and Indiana have still found ways in the past to get through it and win games. It was hard when Thad Mata was here and they still found ways to win games. This roster that we just mapped out in the minutes that they're going to give out and the talent that's on it should win 25 games. That's the expectation that, once again, they're going to have a really good non-conference schedule and that they're not going to completely fall off a cliff in the Big Ten. That doesn't mean you're not going to have a two-game losing streak. That's probably going to happen. I think every team but Michigan had one. That's because Michigan had a two-week layoff because of COVID situation. They probably would have had a two-game losing streak by one point as well. But you can't have a three, four, or five-game losing streak. You should win 25 games. Where you're, what, 9-1, 8-2 in non-conference, and then you put together a really quality conference season. That should be the expectation for this roster. You shouldn't be flirting with 500 when you get into the Big Ten tournament in the Big Ten. You should be more like 16-4 or 15-5 in the Big Ten this year.
So Thad Mata won 25 games 7 out of 13 years here. Chris Holtmann in year one went 25-9, and then 20-15, 21-10, 21-10. I do think that I would like to see them finish like in the top four of the Big Ten. Holtmann knows that in year one, and it's weird. It's like, it's weird talking. It's coaches are weird sometimes. Like, they went 15-3 in year one under Chris Holtmann in the Big Ten, right? The Kata Bates Diop, Jayshon Tate, Thad Mata remnants year, when Kata Bates Diop was the Big Ten player of the year. And like 15-3, it's like, that was like, Chris Holtmann was like, holy moly, this guy can really coach. But he also knows that like the Big Ten wasn't very good that year. So that 15-3 wasn't maybe as good as it looks in the record book, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think he would also argue that like the 12-8 last year is like pretty darn good in a conference that sent as many, you know, that had four of the top eight seeds in the NCAA tournament, right? But I would just like to see them finish in the top four in the league. I would like to see them like be like legitimately fighting for the Big Ten championship in the last 2 weeks of the regular season. I don't think, like, do they have to win it? No, they don't have to win it. But I would like it in, you know, mid-March, or it's like, hey, you know, they're one game behind Wisconsin and Michigan, and they're playing, you know, if they win this game, they'll be tied for the league in the conference. I think that matters. So I think like competing for the Big Ten championship would be a big thing to me, but I think 25 wins sounds like a reasonable thing. And then like, they have to make the Sweet 16. I don't know. Like, it's like, we can pretend that like, the tournament is overvalued, but it is what it is. Like, you have to make this, like, you have to finally make it.
Yeah.
Like, you have to. You can't follow up a tournament dud with another tournament dud. So 25 wins, compete for the Big Ten championship, be in the mix for it, and then get to the Sweet 16 would be a really, really good year. Like, but I wouldn't take that as like, oh, that's fine. It's like, no, I would say that's a very good year. Congratulations on a good basketball year. But also, you have to do it. Like, you have to have a very good year from beginning to end. Like, I don't be ranked in the top five in January and then lose your last four regular season games and fall apart in the tournament. Like, that's not good enough. Be good from beginning to end, be competitive from beginning to end, and also look like Steven. It's going to be a little bit weird next year that they're going to be so old, because then a lot of guys are going to leave after next year. Maybe even Malachi Branham, right? Whatever. But like, look like a program that it's, even if it's like, well, EJ's going and Dwayne's going, maybe even Branham's going, but it looks like some, like a program is here now, right? Like, look like that. So I think it's a very interesting spot, because I think that is very doable, but it also must be done, right? Like, it's,
yeah,
like you have to have a very good year. So go ahead and do it. And like, I think they will, That's the thing with my criticism is like, I'm not saying they're terrible, but I'm just saying like they better be good. Like I'm threatening them. You better be good.
Yeah, it's no longer. Had they, let's just say they had reached the Sweet 16 and then lost, this conversation still would have been, okay, it's time to get to the Elite Eight, the Final Four, whatnot. Let's see if they can take that next step. But because they lost in the first round, it's still the conversation. Still, okay, let's see if you can get to the Elite Eight, Final Four now. And you better do it or else. The tone is different, but the expectation has not changed.
Because, and I'm going to look for this thing that I favorited on Twitter. Because your Ohio State basketball. I would like everyone to remember to embrace like what it is to be Ohio State basketball, and that like that's a thing, and it's not surprising to be good. You know, it's not like settling for like, oh, hey, you finished fifth in the Big Ten. Wow, you were ranked in the top 10 in the AP for a while. It's like, no, I mean, like you're Ohio State basketball. Like, that's what you should do. That's all. Like, I would like the return sort of, Stephen, like of that feeling a little bit. And I don't know that that's the feeling that people have, right? I still feel like Ohio State basketball being good right now is a little bit of more like an underdog feel. And I would like all of the underdog feel to be gone and it just to be like, yeah, they're really good. Oh, yeah. Oh, Ohio State basketball? Oh, yeah, they're definitely making the Sweet 16. They should. They're Ohio State basketball. Am I off on that?
No, it does, because every year, the last 2 years, they started out in the AP preseason pro. They were 18th in 2019-20, and then they were 23 the year before that. And all of a sudden, when they shoot up to the number two spot or the number four spot, you're like, oh, what a pleasant surprise. I didn't know they were going to be that good. And then in 2020, when they still finished at number 19, you go, okay, never mind. That was just a flash in the pan. They were exactly what I thought. And the same thing this year. At least since I've been covering this beat, the last 3 years, it's been – you come in with a low expectation. They surprise you a little bit. And then by the end of it, they do exactly what you thought they were going to do. And that's be a middle of the road team who loses early.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's, I don't like it. I don't like it when anybody pretends that like Ohio State basketball is an underdog. I know what you're not, but I also know, I know you're not a blue blood, but you're also not an underdog. So like, don't act like, I don't want any moral victories or like, you know, try hard points for Ohio State basketball. All right, let's do a last question here. This is an old one from the 616. I'm beginning to worry that Ohio State is going to dip below the level we expect permanently. And that's sort of what I'm talking about here. Ohio State, well, I'll finish the question first. What happens if Chris Holtmann doesn't meet expectations next year? What other coaches out there that Ohio State should be looking at? So there's no point in like doing that, because as you said, like Chris Holtmann is not like, it's all, if they have a terrible season, then it's like, well, you know, yeah. But I mean, I don't think they're going to be terrible. You know, I think they're either going to be fine or quite good. And if they're fine, then I think he might enter the hot seat if they only have a fine year. If they're quite good, then he's good to go. But the idea of dipping below permanently, Stephen, is the thing that we are – like, that's what I'm constantly talking about. And I just want to – real quick. So Ohio State was great in the 60s, right? We all know that. They had two separate runs in the 60s where they were unbelievable. And they won the Big Ten title six times. Won or tied for the Big Ten title six times in the 60s. Then they won it again in 1971. Then they didn't win one for 20 years. They did not win a Big Ten title between 1971 and 1991. Then they won in 91 and 92. Then they didn't win one for 14 years between 92 and 2006. So nobody wants to go back sort of to that desert between 71 and 91. And then there was a 14-year gap again, 92 to 06. Then they win it in 06, 07, 2010, 2011, 2012. So we're coming up now. If they don't win the Big Ten this year, it'll be 10 years that they haven't won the Big Ten. So, you know, but between Thad, they got the 14 years before Thad won his first one in 06 in his second year. That's the Terrence Stiles team, J.J. Sullinger, Jaquel Foster. So they'd be at 10. Now that's not 20, but they'd be halfway to that giant desert that nobody wants to go back to, that time when Ohio State just was not as relevant in Big Ten basketball. So, like, you know, that's the back half of Thad. And it's also been, now they were competitive in there a couple of years still, right? I mean, in 2013, they didn't win it. They went to the Elite Eight or whatever, right? So listen, but like, that is what I am on the alert for, Stephen, right? The idea of like, oh, all of a sudden, if it's like 14 years again between Ohio State Big Ten titles and Chris Holtmann is still here, and it's still like, well, you know, we did. It's like that is not good enough. It's been, if they don't win it this year, it will have been 10 years. That's not all Chris Holtmann's fault, but it's where the program is. That's too long. Like, I don't care how good your pro, I don't care how good the league is. Like, you should get one in there. So again, that's on the way Thad finished for sure, but he also won five. So like, okay, he gets some consideration. I would like to see Chris Holtmann win a Big Ten title. And at some point, it will be too long. It's not yet. I'm not freaking out about 9 years. But get back to me when it's 14 years, and I'll be freaking out.
And I think, obviously, I haven't done that much research into other teams right now because it's May. This might be their best chance. I mean, Michigan State's going to be around. They should have a better year next year. But Illinois just lost their best two players. Luka Garza is gone from Iowa at this point. Indiana just fired their coach. So, they're not going to be much. This might just be their best chance to do. I don't want to say it's their best chance. They might have other best chance. This might be their easiest path in the Holtmann era to actually win the Big Ten title. In the Holtmann era where it's all his players. I'm throwing out the 17-18 season because mm-hmm. that's year one. You do whatever you're supposed to do to just give the fan base hope. Of the other years where he's had his players on the roster, this might be his easiest path to make that happen. So once again, we're back to the expectation is a Big Ten title and an Elite Eight. And had you won last year, we'd be sitting here going, man, I wonder if they take that next step. But instead, we're on, listen, you have an easy path to maybe win a Big Ten title, and you have a roster that looks like it's Final Four ready. You better get there or else.
And to me, again, it just ends with like, asking Ohio State to win a Big Ten title, like, I don't care how good Illinois and Wisconsin and Indiana and Michigan State and Purdue are. I don't care because those teams should be worrying about how good Ohio State is. I'm not saying those teams aren't good, but I'm just saying Ohio State should be as good as them. And then you get one in there somewhere. Just you have that kind of year. So that's all. That's all. And listen, 15-3. I mean, listen, that was a great first year from him. It was a great first year. But I mean, on another, like, I would like to see Holtmann players be like as consistent. I mean, Kata Bates-Diop, like, was the Big Ten player of the year. Like, EJ Liddell, I think, like, top end EJ Liddell is Kata Bates-Diop. I'm not saying they're the exact same player, but that's what Thad Matta, who left not a great. The situation wasn't great. Well, he had that guy. You had the Big Ten player of the year. And that is so far the equivalent of what his best player has been. The best player for Chris Holtmann so far is comparable to the last guy that Thad Matta left you when Thad Matta supposedly left the program in tatters. And nobody is comparing Kata Bates-Diop to D'Angelo Russell or Evan Turner or Greg Oden or Jared Sullinger or guys like that. So that's where I am.
You know what this is in the world of if we're comparing Michigan basketball to Ohio State football, and we're trying to figure out if Ohio State basketball is Michigan football, it's the 2016 Ohio State Michigan game. That's this season, and it's going to overtime. I mean, we've seen how things have spiraled since that game, since that spot, and Curtis Samuel hold his arms out. Ohio State's going in one direction, and Michigan has gone in another direction. So this is that 2016 game is about to play out over a 30-game college basketball season. And depending on how it goes, we might see Ohio State. We know what direction Michigan basketball is going to continue to go in based off the recruiting and who Juwan Howard is. This is where we find out where Jim Harbaugh, we find out whether he's going to go keep soaring up there with Michigan basketball or if he's going to head in the other direction.
That is I write that down too. I expect to see that story on the site. That is a really good comparison because if you're Michigan football in that situation, and we all knew it at the time, they're veteran. They got a bunch of dudes back. Ohio State just sent 10 guys to the first three rounds of the NFL draft, and they get to that game, and they are so lacking. Curtis Samuel has to be their best receiver and their best running back at the same time. They have one guy Ohio State's offense has one guy that matters, and Michigan still can't get it done. And it's like, if you're not going to get it done now, when are you ever going to get it done? And you can't let, you know, Michigan win the Big Ten title and beat you in big games because, like, one dude goes off for 38. Because it's like, well, you've got Washington and Liddell and Branham and Suing and Wheeler as a transfer, and Michi looks pretty good, and Zed Key developed. Like, that's it. That's a really good comparison. And listen, it's not like Michigan football ceased to exist after that, but there is a little bit of a line in the sand of, hey, if you get that, it just takes a little bit of the pressure off going forward, right? Because you answered the question. Yes, we did it. We beat them. We beat Ohio State. We won the Big Ten championship. You don't have to keep asking that. If you don't win the Big Ten this year, it's like, Chris Holtmann, if you're not going to win it then, when are you going to win it? It doesn't mean you can't win it, but the question's going to keep getting asked and your answer isn't going to be as good. So that's a really, I'm curious to dig in, because part of it is old, right? That being old in college basketball these days is a rarity, and it is it's something you've got to be able to take advantage of. Okay. Good questions. Really helped get us through that. I thought we covered everything in terms of the current status, in terms of the context of where the program is. We don't do a ton of basketball. We probably won't do basketball a ton on here unless there's news for the next couple months. But I think anybody who wanted a basketball fix, that should give it to you. Last thing before we move on. They do have an assistant coach opening. So Terry Johnson left to go to Purdue. They have to hire that spot. What did Terry Johnson do? And is there a specific set of responsibilities that they need to account for in whoever this next hire is?
Yeah, he was the defensive coordinator of this Ohio State team. He's been the defensive coordinator for Chris Holtmann basically since back to their Purdue days. That's was his role here, and him going to Purdue, just it's an opportunity to do something else other than just be the defensive coordinator. That was the excitement there for him. They've juggled their response. There's going to be a hiring. Yes, they're just not going to leave that spot open, obviously, but they've juggled some responsibilities. Jake Diebler will now be the defensive coordinator, who also works with the point guard, who actually makes sense now. The best defender on the team is a point guard, Jamari Wheeler, but also the point guard position is where maybe you also have your biggest climb as far as defensive guys with Michi Johnson and Dwayne Washington. So he'll take over those responsibilities. They'll juggle some other responsibilities and also make a hire, but Ryan Peden was the offensive coordinator. Terry Johnson was defensive coordinator last year. Jake Diebler will be the defensive coordinator. We'll see if Ryan Peden's role changes at all. But this having that type of staff, you know, having a guy leave really for the first time in 2 years allows Holtmann to kind of change some people's responsibilities to help with their growth as coaches. So expect that hire in the next couple of months or so. But also, it's going to change some people's responsibilities. Okay. Which is actually a good thing, because Ohio State's defense wasn't good, so they probably needed a new voice.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll talk about that when it happens, but otherwise we'll probably take a break on the pod from hoops for a little bit. You always can read cleveland.com/OSU for everything with basketball, every news story, analysis. Steven, you are planning, though, we want to make sure the listeners understand this. Are you planning a series this week of stories or next week of sort of breaking down what? Is it position by position, or what are you going to do?
Yeah. I'm starting it. It actually starts tomorrow. By the time you guys hear this, the first one will be up. I did something similar last year. I'm just going to break down position group by position group. And I split it up guards, wings, and bigs. That's basically what basketball is at this point, where I'm breaking down, you know, what their role might project out to be. What should we expect from certain guys? And just breaking down very similar last year, long detailed posts all week. And I'm going to give one every single day for the rest of the week.
So it'll expand on what we talked about here. And, yeah. You know, sometimes your ears, you forget stuff. You want to have it on a computer screen. So you can find that at cleveland.com/OSU. All right. We'll be back for the big Wednesday pod. Nathan will be back. We'll have at least three guests. We will reset every quarterback situation in the Big Ten to try to figure out where Ohio State fits into that. But also, you guys, I mean, this is important. You need to know this. We say on this podcast, we don't know other teams. At least you got no quarterbacks, because those are the guys that can jump up and get you. David Blau, Nate Stanley. I mean, if you want a Connor Cook, if you want to run through, actually, I probably should write a thing about this. With the, if you want to run through the reasons that like Ohio State has lost regular season games in the past 8 years, much of the time, as much as like I always have theories about NFL talent at certain positions, go back and look at how the quarterbacks played in those games. Look at how Michael Penix played for Indiana in this game that got close. Go find how Nate Sudfeld played in 2015 when Indiana was playing and throwing a pass into the end zone on the last play of the game to try to tie it. Exceptional quarterback play is one of the things that'll jump up. If Ohio State ever does get upset, that's usually one of the things that happens. So you need to know what's going on at other Big Ten quarterback positions, and we will do that on Wednesday. For now, thanks for listening. On behalf of Stephen Means, I'm Doug Lea Maurice, and that was Buckeye Talk.